Hello, welcome back to the Shift Network's Shakti Summit, where we are exploring what it means to awaken the heart of feminine sensuality, sex, and the sacred. I am your host, Lisa Schrader. I am so delighted that you're here, and I am very much looking forward to this next conversation. We have Deborah Taj Annapol with us. And Deborah is an explorer of the spaces where sex, spirit, sustainability, love, and ecology meet. She brings a rare integration of over three decades of spiritual practice, the healing arts, Western psychology, academic training, and women's wisdom to her work as a seminar leader and a relationship coach. She holds a PhD in clinical psychology, is the author of Polyamory in the 21st Century, The Seven Natural Laws of Love, Compersion, Polyamory, The New Love Without Limits, and the producer of the video Pelvic Heart Integration. Dr. Annapol has worked with groups and partners and individuals exploring conscious relationships, tantra, and sexual healing for over 30 years. She has two grown daughters and two granddaughters, and is based in the San Francisco Bay Area when she's not traveling around the world. And if you would like to connect with Deborah, her beautiful work, and learn more about her, you can find her at her website, which is lovewithoutlimits.com. Again, lovewithoutlimits.com. Deborah, welcome to our call.
Thank you, Lisa. Really happy to be here today.
I am so happy that you're here as well. And I want to just give a little backstory to why I've invited you here and let our listeners know around the world. When we were looking at the Shakti Summit again for this year, this is the second year, and we were talking about expanding it, I was in my own inquiry and meditation and talking with my colleagues at the Shift Network about, okay, well, you know, what's in the field here? Like, what does Shakti really want? And I heard, like, oh, we should have a conversation about polyamory. And then immediately I said, oh, please don't make me do that. I don't want to do that. That feels really edgy. I'm afraid of that. But it just kept arising. You know, it just kept kind of coming up. And so when I thought about that, I reached back into my own history. And this is not something I've been very public about, but the last 7 years of my marriage were in an open relationship. We opened our marriage, and it was very catalytic for me in my own awakening, and it was also very traumatic for me, frankly, emotionally. And at that time, I actually reached out to Dr. Annapol for some support and some coaching, and just was so held by her, you know, and loved her perspective. And so that's why I invited her. I thought, well, if we're going to have this conversation about polyamory, what that means, the ways that it can be expansive, the ways it can be contractive, let's bring the queen herself on this topic into the Shakti Summit. So, Deborah, that's really why I've invited you. I'm just so glad that you're here.
Oh, thank you. I'm just really thrilled when I realize that the web that's been woven over the decades is still active and growing, and so here we are.
Here we are. Yeah, so because I know for a lot of you listening, this word polyamory might be really new to you, and so I want to ask Deborah to help us into the conversation by defining it. And I also want to acknowledge there's probably many of you that have been actively exploring your sexuality with multiple partners for a while. And so wherever you're at in this conversation, I just really invite you to lean in and see what's here for you. Take what serves you and discard what doesn't. But Deborah, if you could just kind of help us enter here with what do we mean by polyamory, and how do you see it really being expressed in the world today?
Okay, well, that's a really good question, Lisa, because what I'm finding as more and more people are using the word polyamory, that it really means different things to different people. Mm-hmm. And what I meant by it, 20 years ago is not necessarily the way it's being used now. So it's a made-up word. I was using the phrase responsible non-monogamy, which was kind of more descriptive in retrospect. But we wanted a word that was not about what it wasn't, but about what it was. So polyamory means many loves. And it's because it's a brand new word, in the beginning anyway, there was no history attached to it. I was using the word polygamy for a while, but one of my mentors, F.M. Isfandiari, said, "No, you don't want to use that word. That has centuries of baggage behind it, and it's really associated with a very patriarchal men, multiple partners, multiple wives for men only kind of thing. That's not literally what it means, but that's what it was associated with. So now we have this word polyamory, many loves, but, you know, of course, in a way, there's nothing controversial about loving more than one person. It's when we bring sex into it that it gets not only threatening, perhaps, to the status quo, but emotionally volatile for couples who are exploring the possibility of including others into their sexual bond. So what does the word really mean? As I defined it in 1992, it was not about multiple partners even. It was about allowing love rather than the culture or the mind to determine what shape a relationship would take, to determine, to take love out of the box and allow love to see what was the most appropriate form for it to be expressed in. Now, the truth is that if we do that, if we take out the cultural, religious programming that we've all gotten, over time, very few people are going to have only one sex partner or even only one mate in their lifetime. That's extremely rare. And probably most of the people that are living that way, it's not because it's what's natural to them. It's because that's what their beliefs or their circumstances are dictating. So in the beginning, polyamory was really a way of bringing together the freedom of allowing love to flow and to liberate love from the chains that, as some of your previous speakers have discussed, result in a deadening of the sexuality and sometimes even the feelings of love when we believe that we have to limit our love to one person only, and yet our physical and our spiritual nature is telling us something different.
And when you speak about how polyamory, the word itself, is being used today, let's just dive in a little bit maybe to, I guess, maybe the shadow aspect, or how is it being co-opted, and what is it being sort of used in the name of, in your opinion?
Okay, well, you know, I hear people joking now about things like polyfuckery or serial polyamory, and all of these represent, as polyamory has gone more mainstream and gone further and further from the original vision, what's happened is that it's kind of a way of saying that I can do whatever I want sexually with whoever I want, and you have nothing to say about it. And this is, you know, depending on who's saying that, depending on how responsible and conscious the person is who's invoking the polyamorous creed for their ethical sexual ethics, it might look like swinging or recreational sex, casual sex. Not that there's anything wrong with those styles of relating. It's certainly not up to me to pass judgment or dictate to other people how they should express their sexuality. In fact, that's kind of the whole point of polyamory, is to put the responsibility on the individuals involved to see what's appropriate for them. But the confusion occurs when we have one person using the word polyamory to mean a committed sexual loving relationship that includes more than one person, and we have somebody else using it to mean a one-night stand or the type of sex that's come to be called swinging, which is structured to try to separate love from sex. And again, it's not up to me to say whether this is a good thing or a bad thing. It's not my personal choice, but the point I'm trying to make is that basically anything and everything is called polyamory. It no longer means anything. So the shadow side you were asking about is that, you know, just as in monogamy, the shadow side of monogamy is secret affairs, the shadow side of polyamory, I would say, is a tendency for people to have either superficial connections that are kind of masked or dressed up to look like something special, or where two people have a very different understanding of what the rules of engagement are because they haven't talked about it. They're just calling it polyamory, but they mean different things. And the other shadow side is that where people are hiding their non-monogamous nature and pretending to only be attracted to one person in monogamy. In polyamory, sometimes people are hiding their desire or their need to bond and have a more committed, attached relationship, and pretending that they have no emotions and that everything's fine when, in fact, all these denied needs and emotions are coming out sideways.
Yeah, and I will confess that was definitely, in my own experience, a real shadow side of what I was calling polyamory, was that, you know, really suppressing my need for deeper commitment and deeper holding and being met emotionally. There was a way that, you know, those needs weren't getting met for me. Frankly, they weren't getting met for me in my marriage. And then, you know, lo and behold, when I went out and had more than one partner, and my husband and I were very, you know, in agreement about that. So we were very conscious. We actually researched polyamory. We read your book. We talked to a lot of people. We entered into that agreement, not impulsively in any way. It was about a 6-month period of really kind of evaluating that. But sure enough, when I went into polyamory, all of those wounds that were already there just actually got amplified, you know, and they were amplified with a whole lot more sexual energy that was, you know, fueling that deep need that I was ignoring and repressing and not sure how to get met around what I needed for bonding and for emotional stability. Is that, maybe you can just speak to that, because I know a lot of people come to you for support and counseling once they're in sort of that can be a very chaotic realm of, you know, sort of adding fuel to the fire, if you will, and then, whoa, what do I do with all of this material, this stuff that's coming up for me that needs some support?
Yes. Well, I think you've mentioned a number of really important ingredients for any kind of relationship, whether it's polyamorous or not, to be an alchemical process. So the container is one critical element, and a lot of the people who come to me struggling in their polyamorous relating, there's no container. And what I mean by that is, as I said before, they're trying to pretend, or they have the illusion that they have no emotional needs. And if you're looking for a relationship to be your teacher, and as you so beautifully described, the intensity of a polyamorous situation brings to your attention that you've got some stuff to work on, then hallelujah, that's the good news. But most people are not entering into polyamory because they are looking for a crucible of transformation. They just want to have more sex or more love. Mm-hmm. And if they don't have a container, even if they do want transformation, it's going to be really difficult without some kind of a container. And the other piece that I think is, as you say, you end up in a chaotic situation because a system has been created which is in a negative spiral. And, of course, what everyone wants to experience is the positive spiral. But you often need some kind of outside mentoring, coaching, modeling, something to turn that around. And I think that when people reach out for that and are able to find it, then even though it's challenging, they can really make an incredible amount of emotional, spiritual progress in this crucible of polyamory. But without that, it can be very destructive, and I'm the first to admit that. It's not for everybody, that's for sure. But at the same time, I haven't seen that monogamy is necessarily such an easy path either. So relationship in general, I think people are struggling with it because we're in the midst of a paradigm shift. And so people are trying to bring the old paradigm forward with them into these new forms of relationship, and it doesn't work.
Can you say more about that paradigm shift? How would you characterize what's happening right now?
Well, the paradigm shifts in physics, for example, are much less emotionally loaded, but actually quite similar to the shift that is going on with love. For example, in the old paradigm, people think of love as a substance, as some kind of really material object that can be given, taken, shared, and that if it's divided up, that if my love is divided between three people, that means each of them gets less than if it was all going to one. That's the old mm-hmm. paradigm.
Like it's a pie.
Right, the pie metaphor, yeah. And in the new paradigm, we recognize love as a state of consciousness. And I I like to think of it as a radio station. So it doesn't matter how many people are tuned in to this podcast, for example. It doesn't take away from the experience of all the other people who are receiving that transmission. And so if anything, it amplifies. Love is amplified when it's shared by more people.
Mm-hmm.
Another, I think, really core shift in the paradigm, I call it the law of source in the seven natural laws of love, says that the source of love is inside of you, not in your partner, not in your parents, not in your children. And this is a really important shift, because as long as we believe that love is coming from outside of us, we are very likely to prostitute ourselves, to sell out in order to get this love that we need so much. And I find a lot of people are kind of paying lip service to this law. We know that somehow we're supposed to find the love inside, but in order to do that, I mean, that's kind of the deepest spiritual work that we will ever meet, is to take our identity out of the ego and place it in that ultimate reality that really is love. So it's not so much about, you know, being nice to yourself, kind to yourself, nurturing to yourself. Those are all good things, but that's still really looking at yourself as separate from the love. And so this is a huge shift. And I could go on if you like. Because
yeah, just a little more there, because I'm noticing like I'm starting to grab it, but it's not quite coalesced yet. So just let me keep going there.
Okay, well, the realization that we are love, that's our nature, not the ego, not the personality, not the body, not all the things that we've been taught we are, which the spiritual masters have all pointed to being illusory. And what's real is the divine source of love, or the divine, another word for love is truth. So yeah, people can, the ego can get quite tweaked about, oh, someone's going to tell me now what's true. Just like, oh, someone's going to tell me now what love really is. And I blogged about that, and there's been almost a million responses to that blog. So it's really got people going. Like, this question is, what is love? And who's going to decide that? And the point is that love, like truth, is not about anybody's ego deciding or dictating what these things are. It's about coming into an awakening of the reality, the ultimate reality, and realizing nothing else is real. Now, many people say, well, that's all well and good if we're talking about spirituality, but, you know, what about my flesh and blood relationship with my husband or my wife?
Mm.
Yeah. Can this apply there? And I think because the old paradigm was based so much on power over and dependency, that the only sustainable way to move forward in relationship is from this place of recognizing and honoring the divine within each other. Mm. And so I don't see another way. Now, we have our human nature, which is always going to, or for most people anyways, is always going to pop up with its very human fears and needs and desires. And that's why the law of forgiveness, which says it's okay to make mistakes. Mm-hmm. We're not perfect. And if we can forgive ourselves and forgive each other, then yeah, we keep, we always have a second chance. We keep on keeping on.
Mm-hmm. And,
The seven natural laws of love are really not anything I made up, but what I've seen is the common message in every spiritual path about the nature of love, where it comes from, how it operates, and there are laws that govern this. And this is what I was really kind of trying to point to decades ago when I started talking about polyamory. But at that point, I didn't really have the chutzpah to say, okay, we're going to throw out everything we know about love and we're going to start with a new paradigm. Mm-hmm. But in retrospect, that would have expressed more clearly what the vision that I had was for polyamory. Now, coming back to polyamory, it's unfortunate that a lot of people, I feel, are kind of abusing the spirit and are behaving in ways that are not very loving with each other and using polyamory as a excuse for that. That really saddens me. But at the same time, I realize that, okay, what's happening is that a lot of things that were not acknowledged, secret affairs, sex addiction, and things that were hidden are now more out in the open. People have less shame and more support to reveal themselves, and this is the only way things are ever going to change.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very confusing for people that are just coming into this new territory to figure out what's going on, because in the enormous diversity, you can find heaven and hell right side by side.
Yeah, which is really the tantric experience, right? That we're not rejecting any part of what this life experience is bringing to us. We are embracing that in its glory and its chaos. And at least for me, there's been no more fertile ground for me to really explore that than, you know, inside of sexual relationships. The times where I have been, married, monogamous, the times where I have been single, times where I have been celibate, times where I have had multiple partners and been polyamorous. And frankly, now that I am very blissed out in a 2.5-year monogamous partnership and feeling the depth that is possible for me there, been very fertile ground. So I offer that to all of you who might be entering into this conversation and trying to find your own place. And Deborah, maybe we can just speak to that. Like where would somebody begin? Like I kind of think of the spectrum of people who are sort of maybe more inherently aligned with, and their truth is to be more monogamous or serially monogamous. And then there's other people who are like very clear that they want to have the freedom and want to express themselves with multiple partners or lovers.
Yeah, one of the core elements of polyamory for me is to respect diversity and to realize that there's not one form of relationship that's right for everybody or even for the same person at different points in life. It's kind of a great paradox that in order to become more self-aware, we need to create some labels and categories and start defining different things. But ultimately, pretty much everybody I talk to who's been on this path for now many years gets to a point of realizing that the labels and the categories are not really relevant. And you know, we don't want to create another yet another identity. Another
We're
thing.
Trying to get away from those, right? We're trying to
shed
those forms. But it's so funny how in our, you know, egoic experience we cling to them. We want the definitions so often.
Right. And that's part of the paradigm shift. In the old paradigm, you know, there's very much a right way, or at least a right way for me, or a right way for me at this time, and there's nothing wrong with that. But in the new paradigm, it's sort of, you know, it's there is no relationship. It's what's happening now. And it's very easy to abuse that very high spiritual concept and be commitment phobic or flaky. But if you really, with the truth of the heart and the truth of the energy, then everything takes care of itself. We don't need all these concepts. We don't need all these rules. But the reality is most people just, you know, are not born or certainly don't begin their intimate lives in a place where they can move in that way.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask you, Deborah, about... I will share from my own experience, and again, I hope all of you listening, I know this can be a conversation that can be very triggering, and so I just want to invite you to take a big breath if you're having that experience, if you're noticing that you're feeling like, oh yeah, this is really right, or this is really wrong, or you're going into that sort of dualistic place, which is not uncommon when we're having conversations like this that are edgy. I just invite you to breathe into it. And also want to say I'm certainly not trying to say this is something you should do. We're not prescribing it. We're not saying it's a bad thing. We're just exploring it, right? We're just kind of looking at it. And inside of that context, one of the things I've noticed, again, just about my own experience, Deborah, that I'd love to have you speak about, is that there was a way that I was looking to multiple partners and experiences for something that I have actually only found by the freedom, not to have multiple partners, but the freedom, the liberation that has happened inside of a committed and monogamous partnership, the one that I'm in right now, that has allowed me a level of depth, a level of vulnerability, a level of deep safety to go deeper into my Shakti, into my feminine experience. And my sense is that that is part of the gold of what a lot of us as women are looking for, and in our very real desire to find that, sometimes we're going more for the breadth of experience, right? We're going out there trying to find it rather than deepening in. And so I want to just ask you to speak about the feminine experience. Like, is this journey into polyamory, you know, ultimately beneficial for some women, or can it be really harmful? And the depth that we're seeking, you know, is it more conducive to find it in a committed partnership where we feel trust and safety with one person, or is it possible to have that with multiple people?
Okay, well, again, there's a lot of things I'd love to address in as far as what you just said. So I'll just jump in with the first thing, which is that when I say polyamory, and people often ask me, well, you know, what about you? You wrote the book. Are you polyamorous? And I say, well, if what you mean by that is that I'm looking to love, I'm looking to the truth of the energetic connection to determine the appropriate form for the relationship, I can't imagine doing anything else. And so a consciously chosen monogamy, as you described, well, I've realized, you know, this is actually the container that supports me, my feminine, my masculine, whatever. This is the container that's supporting me right now on my journey. I consider that actually a category of polyamory, just as I would consider consciously chosen celibacy. All these things are different from feeling that either there's no choice or you're being a victim and it's being forced on you. About 10 years ago, I started having people come to me saying, you know, I really kind of feel like I want to be monogamous, but all my friends and my lover tell me that there's something wrong with me and that I should really be polyamorous. And it was at that point I went, oh, no, you know, we've created a monster because that's why I prefer the term conscious relationship. Yeah, it's about consciously listening. And for me, one of the really deep aspects of Shakti is the receptivity. Now, Shakti can express in an active or a receptive way, but it's the receptive that leads to the vulnerability and that leads to the deepening that you're talking about. That is, and I think actually in a man-woman relationship, both people, or if we're talking about three or four people, all the people need to cultivate this receptive Shakti that is so missing in the world that's been all about doing and competing and accomplishing. So the container with two people is, I'd say, simpler and more accessible. But that receptivity, I think that's what you're talking about, that you're seeking and you didn't find in polyamory. And many people don't, because it's the old paradigm still of competition, of trying, of pushing, forcing, all these things that are not nourishing. They're depleting. Mm-hmm. And yeah, my experience, in fact, this is really what started me on the whole path of looking at multiple partner relating, was that I just happened to meet four people who had a relationship, and this was three women and a man, it happened to be at the point where I met them, but they considered that they had a group marriage. But it was an open group marriage, and when I began relating with them, you know, both sexually and in other intimate ways, I felt so nourished. I had never felt so nourished in an intimate relationship before, and I thought, okay, I found it, but. They tried to tell me, you know, it's not about the number of partners. It's not about the form. It's about the paradigm shift. But I was caught up in the glamour of it, like pretty much everybody is who opens up to the concept. Yeah, there's sort of the honeymoon phase, and then there's the reality of the chaos. And but my very first taste of it, I'm sure this is not the experience of most people, was deeply nourishing, was being deeply held in a place where it was completely safe to be vulnerable, where I felt the commitment of everyone to each other's well-being. So, yeah, this is not unique to any form of relationship. This is what love feels like.
Yeah, and thank you, because I can see, you know, that that is possible in whatever the form, like you said, whether it's in a polyamorous form or whether it's in a committed monogamous form. What it really is about is that love, and that that is possible inside of whatever form we choose.
Yeah. So for me, exploring multiple partner relating was really important, because my experience as a young woman growing up was of men, or women as agents of men, wanting to control my sexuality, wanting to possess me and my body. And I had a big reaction against that. And what I observed was that the whole relationship terrain, and this was in the 60s and 70s, so things were kind of opening up, but it was still very skewed toward men and what men wanted and what men were entitled to. And so for me as a woman, I really had a need and a desire to say, yeah, no, you don't control me, you don't own me, and I can make my own choices. Now, that was very much in reaction, but at the same time, I think without having, giving myself permission to have that reaction and to explore freely and overcome all of the conditioning, the guilt, the shame that says that sexuality is evil. If you're a sexual woman, you're a whore. And, you know, this has caused a lot of damage, and I don't think I need to explain that to anyone who's listening here, but so I think that's a stage that for at least some women it can be very helpful to break out of that and to claim sovereignty and to see, you know, in a way, it's like equal rights for women. Men have always had the privilege of multiple partners. And this was something that was taken away from women by the patriarchy. But at a certain point, the rebellion has to end. And the maturity of
recognizing. We can't be a teenager forever, right?
Yeah, and, you know, I think that's a lot of what we see in the polyamory world, is people who weren't allowed to express as teenagers, and so now they're doing it as adults.
And it can be a lot messier when you're an adult.
Well, yes, because, you know, now we've got children and houses and all kinds of other complications. You know, as far as the myth, really, that monogamy is what women want and non-monogamy is what men want, I don't think that's true. Mm-hmm. But I do feel very deeply at this point that the ability to relax and realize there's nothing to protect and there's nothing to fight over, and that it's safe to really get intimate with another person, or perhaps more than one. I mean, it's like a lot easier, a lot more simple with one person. But sometimes life brings you something else. So realizing that it's the sense of deep connection and intimacy that's so much more important. It's the sense of caring. It's the sense of honoring and respecting. You know, this is what's lacking in so many relationships, whatever form they take.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Beautiful. And we're just about out of time, and that would be a perfect period. But I, before I let you go, I'm sorry to, we don't have a little bit more time, but I do want you to just speak about pelvic heart integration, because this is really, I think, just such a beautiful part of the work that you're offering, and it's really this looping right between our sexual energy and the heart and the love energy. So can you just maybe give us a just a minute on that or so, and then let people know how they can find out more info about it?
Okay, yeah, thanks for bringing that up, because I often tell people I wish I had done the pelvic heart integration work before I began my exploration of polyamory. But the work itself is not about monogamy or non-monogamy. It's about the inner marriage. It's about the union, the harmonious union of the masculine and the feminine inside. Because without that, it's going to be very hard to find that outside. And mm-hmm. most of us have internalized a disharmonious union using our parents and our brothers and sisters and maybe aunts and uncles and other extended family members. Most of us come from families with varying degrees of dysfunction. And so everybody knows that, you know, when you get together with one person, you're going to act out your mother or father issues. But in polyamory, you can act out your mother and your father and your brother and sister and cousin issues all in one moment. That's why it's so chaotic. And what the pelvic heart integration work does is to give you an opportunity to very quickly become conscious of all of this programming, and not just at a mental level, but at a bodily level and at a breath level, as well as at a sexual level, and to clear all of that out so that we can reestablish this very natural flow between the heart and the pelvis, between love and sex. And if our culture was not warping our natural development in so many cases, this is, you know, what could be more natural than for the feminine and the masculine to love each other and to come together in a harmonious, juicy union. But in fact, for most people, either they don't find that at all or it's fleeting. And so the pelvic heart integration work is a way of really reestablishing that natural unity inside, and then using the support of the group, the community, to reflect that in our environment.
Thank you. So beautiful. What's coming to me is, you know, as within, so without. And so it's this
real
inquiry into, you know, when we are doing that inner marriage work inside our own Shakti, Shiva, masculine and feminine, and healing that inner union, then we are so much more able. I can certainly vouch for this in my own journey. We are so much more able to attract harmony and harmonious unions and beloved relationships in the outer dimension. But I really, really, truly believe it starts right there inside. So, Deborah, thank you so much. It was just a wealth of information today. I feel so actually proud of myself for being courageous enough to call you in and have this conversation. It actually felt very, very personally healing for me. And I hope those of you listening also were able to really lean into this conversation and take from it what serves you. So thank you, Deborah, so much. Deep bow to you.
Oh, my pleasure. Yes, thank you so much for including the shadow side into the Shakti Summit.
Thank you. Thank you for holding my hand, holding all of our hands in such a beautiful way of, I feel you anchoring the wise woman for us and, you know, the deep practitioner that you are and the very human woman that you are that has journeyed for 30 years in these dimensions. Thank you for doing your research for us and for bringing the gifts of that forward so that we can all benefit. I really, really appreciate that.
Oh, thank you, Lisa.
So that concludes our first day of the Shakti Summit. Wow, it's been such an incredible day. I'm just vibrating with Shakti energy. We would love to hear what it's been for you, whether you've been able to grab just a piece or if you've been here all day or anything in between. Just pop onto facebook.com/shiftnetwork if you'd like to share. We'd love to hear from you. And if you would love to have lifetime access to the MP3s and transcripts from this 2014 Shakti Summit, two full days, 11 incredible teachers talking about the heart of feminine sensuality, sex, and the sacred, you can get that at the Shakti Summit /upgrade, incredibly reasonably priced if you want to own all of this. Again, the Shakti Summit /upgrade will get you there. So I send you off with so much love at the end of our first day. Tune back in tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock Pacific. We have this an incredible lineup tomorrow with Colin Tipping and Jennifer Hadley and Orna and Matthew Walters and just so many amazing teachers coming back for more tomorrow. Also, wrapping it up with Mirabai Starr and Andrew Harvey, an incredible piece, and also Leonie Dawson joins us tomorrow. So that's what we've got lined up for you in the morning. I send you off with so much love. Thank you for your listening. Those of you that were live on the webcast and on the phone calls today, thank you. I'm sorry we didn't have more room for questions, but know that your presence creates the field from which these questions emerge. So it's no small thing that you've joined us, and I offer you my gratitude for that. All right, we'll see you in the morning. Lots of love. Bye-bye.